planet to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall, and I'm honored to be sitting down with Ryan Murphy and Mac Wilberg, the director and associate director of the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square, which is a mouthful. It used to be the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, but, you know, with the changes of everything, we certainly call it the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square. Respectfully, was that a difficult change, gentlemen, for you? I want to start right there. Was that a hard thing that you're still getting used to?
No, actually, it has not been a difficult change for us. And in fact, I sort of anticipated it might be more of a difficult process than it has been. We have felt very little change and very little impact.
Yeah, I mean, still the same choir, and
it is.
You know, the great music, and certainly when it comes from the prophet with inspiration, it becomes a very easy thing.
That's
to
right.
be like.
Yeah,
right.
And many people called it the Tabernacle Choir anyway. So
right.
just losing that Mormon off the front.
Tabernacle
was,
Choir, or even Tab Choir.
Yeah.
For, you know, that's been how
yeah.
people have referred to the choir for really a long time, and so
it was fairly painless.
It's really not been a difficult process for
yeah.
us.
When the change came out, I know that there were a lot of people that were like, but the Tabernacle Choir is not a thing that will change. You know, we'll change like Mormon.org and some of these other things, but certainly not the Tabernacle Choir. But then it changed. And then I had to laugh at some of the new nicknames that people will call the Tabernacle Choir. Tabcats is one that often we use. And I think it's just because of our laziness. We don't want to say the whole thing.
Someone in the choir already got that license plate, by the way. So it's
really?
It's taken. Yeah, it's taken.
Well, I'll have to come up with something else. You know, we get to see you guys at General Conference. Every single general conference. In fact, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, if you consider them a speaker or a spiritual message, more than any other prophet or any other apostle ever in the history of the church. With going on, how many years is it now for the Tabernacle Choir? That you guys have, it's been around for...
For General Conference?
For General Conference since...
All for decades.
Yeah.
Singing at General Conference has been... the choir has been a very big part of
for more
General
than
Conference
decades,
for,
yeah, a century,
over a century.
Yeah,
it's such a phenomenal group. It's such a thing that's. I bring that up to kind of set the tone, because we see you, both of you, respectively, at different times directing, but I don't think that a lot of people really know too much about you. I will say this, for example, like I know you, Mac Wilberg, you used to teach at BYU, as I understand.
That's correct.
And that you do a lot of music composition. I was in choir in high school, and we sang several Mac Wilberg arranged pieces. We did I wrote this down. I saw three ships, Away
right.
in a Manger, and Angels We Have Heard on
right.
High.
Right, mm. yeah.
We did those.
What high school did you go to?
I went to Hillcrest High School under Dr. Bentley.
Yeah, who's a... terrific director.
Tenor
yeah.
bass, tenor bass.
I was a tenor.
Okay.
A second tenor.
Good.
As I've hit puberty a little bit more, I may be more into the baritone, but a huge appreciation for music, and music is such a foundation of the church. I think that's why, besides the tradition of it, that the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square is consistently invited to come and to be a part of General Conference. But who are you guys? Like, why do you get to be the director and the associate director of the Tabernacle Choir?
That's a really good question.
Well, like any other job that one has, you have to have certain qualifications.
Sure. So let's talk about it. I didn't mean that to be. You guys kind of looked at me, and I'm like, oh, I hope I'm not being abrasive. But like, where did you study? Have you always been in music? Have you always wanted to be a leader of a choir, or is this just something that you felt like God led you to?
Well, I always say it's the only thing that I can do, and really, there's much truth to that. I started, and I think Ryan is the same. I started playing the piano by ear when I was 4 years old.
Okay,
so it's always been a part of who I am.
Is family pretty musical then as well?
On my mother's side, yes. On my father's side, not at all.
Okay,
and like everything else, if you have certain talents, then you try to develop them,
sure.
And I think both of us had. Mothers who made sure that our talents were developed, and like anything else, you try to prepare yourself, and so you are you educate yourself, and then you gain experience, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And then in both of our cases, we were prepared when the time came for the selection of the director and the associate director of the Tabernacle Choir.
Cool.
So it's like any other job, I would say, in terms of being prepared.
Yeah. I guess the thing for me is, like, did you go to BYU yourself? Are you a convert to the church? Like, those kind of things that as I see you direct the choir, I go, he is a brilliant musician. I wonder where he's from. Like, pick up some of those pieces for me. Tell me a little bit about you.
And then I'll make mine very short, and then Ryan's is
no,
is
you guys are both great.
I'm from a very small town, Castledale, Utah, in Emory County, here in the state of Utah.
Uh-huh.
And my father was a coal miner, my mother was a school teacher, and so I really grew up in an area where there wasn't what you would call a lot of culture in terms of classical music, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And so, but
there is that pageant, though, that's no longer going to be there.
Yes, that is correct. That is correct.
That was a huge part of that community.
Absolutely. And again, I had a mother who made sure that my talents were developed and drove many miles to take me for lessons and those sorts of things. And then I ended up as a student at BYU. Did my undergraduate work there, and then here's a case of trying to be prepared. Went on to graduate school at the University of Southern California.
Okay.
And then I was lucky in that when my mentor at BYU decided to retire, I was just finishing my graduate work, and that's how I was.
Oh, wow.
I was very, very fortunate, and I feel myself very, very blessed to have been able to go back to BYU and was there for 15 years and then have been the Tabernacle Choir for 20 years. So enough about me.
Ryan's
story is very,
sorry to put
very
you on
interesting.
The spot.
Well, I'm from a small town in Connecticut called Newtown, Connecticut. Great town, small town, great place to grow up. Unfortunately became well-known in past years because it's where the Sandy Hook School shooting occurred.
I was going to say, that town sounds familiar.
Correct, and I went to that school as a kid, so rather traumatic. But a great town with lots of opportunities, and I grew up playing the piano like Mac did, and grew up singing in choirs and loved it and went to BYU. So I'll try to keep this short. I got an undergraduate degree in piano and organ performance and then stayed for a master's degree in conducting, studied with Mac and Ron Staley, and then went to Boston University to get my doctorate in conducting. And did a lot of things. Taught high school for 8 years and junior high for 4 years.
Wow.
And had a big music theater. I don't know if say a big, but music theater was a big part of my life for a number of years. I was the music director at Sundance in Provo Canyon and then down at Tuacon for 3 years. So had that sort of element to my life as well. But I often say the same thing as Mac. I'm really not good at anything else. So there's nothing else that I really could have done.
I have to say Ryan was as he's already said, one of my students at BYU and mm-hmm. recognized that this was a unique, very gifted individual.
Oh, interesting. So. You guys talk about moms that drove the force, right? And then sometimes I think about my sister who played the piano and mom, you will sit down and you will play and you will do all those things. and then it's sort of an interesting thing, like as we kind of get into that almost adulthood, that being able to be a proponent for our children to study their passions, right? You said that you studied a piano and organ performance, and that is a very small slice of being able to feed a family and care for yourself. Was there ever any adversity of that, or was this, like you've said, this is what I know how to do and I've got to go for it?
You know, amazingly, my parents were always 100% supportive, and I look back on that and I'm very grateful. They never tried to talk me into getting a business degree on the side just in case. They always supported me 100%, so I feel very fortunate. My mom is a convert to the church. She joined the church. She's from Belgium, joined the church in Belgium, and is not necessarily musical per se, but loves music and was just always super supportive of everything, so I feel very lucky.
What about for you, Mac?
Remind me of what the question was.
As far as being supportive of you to go...
Okay, right.
So let me cue it up again.
Did your mom want you to be...
What about for you, Mac?
I, like Ryan, have been very fortunate. My father passed away when I was quite young.
I'm sorry.
So I had my mother, and then and also I had great grandparents. I had wonderful grandparents, but I had my maternal grandmother was she was a singer, not trained singer, but mm-hmm. you know, like small town, she sang at many funerals mm-hmm. and church events, so on and so forth. I can say that I always had support in very significant ways. When I was going through graduate school. There were not a lot of jobs at the time,
yeah.
Particularly in the field that I was in. So I went through graduate school worrying about whether I was going to have a job or not once I completed my all my studies. And so I think that that's always – I think that's probably a dilemma for anyone who's
sure.
who's particularly when you're right in the middle of your education, wondering if you're making the right decision. But I feel like I've been very blessed in my life to do what I love to do.
I want to take a break for a quick second. When we come back, we are going to talk about the new album, Let Us All Press On. But I want to talk about the significance of music, and I want to tip my hand a little bit and let you guys know some interactions that I've had with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. We'll come back and do that in the second block of the Cultural Hall. I want to take a quick second and talk to you about Best DJ in Utah now in its second year. Last year, I went to Washington, to Roche Harbor, and did a gorgeous wedding. This year, I'm slated to go to Moab, to go to Denver to do weddings. And guys, it couldn't be going any better. Thanks in large part to folks like yourself, people who are listening to this and say, you know what, I need a wedding or a mobile DJ for something, and then reach out to me. You can go to bestdjinutah.com. You can find me on all of the social medias at Richie T. Stedman, or you can certainly just send me an email, Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E-T as in tough guy, Stedman, S-T-E-A-D-M-A-N @gmail.com. I would love to see what I could do to make your event that much better. Whether it's a party or the biggest day of your life, you need the best DJ in Utah. And like I said, it doesn't have to be in Utah. It can just be the best DJ in Utah. I don't know. Now we start to get into like the technical things. It's bestdjinutah.com.
Hi friends, Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. You know, I get a lot of emails with questions from customers, and here's one. Dear Dan, I love to do business at your stores, but I have a lot of Apple and PC stuff. It's too bad because I like doing business with local people. I wish there was a way to make all of my gadgets work together. Signed, Scattered. Dear Scattered, Windows, Mac, Android, we can make all of them sync up for you. Your phone, tablet, and PC, they'll all be one big, happy, diverse family. So Scattered, bring in all your Apple and PC stuff. Now that's comfort and peace of mind. Get a brand new PC laptop's desktop for just $799 with a lifetime parts and labor warranty at any PC laptop's location while supplies last. $799, you can't beat that deal. Please visit any one of our locations right now or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com.
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall. Remember, if you like this, you can hop online, patreon.com/thecultural hall, and you can become a subscriber there. Anything that you donate does help us to be able to do these things in a great way. Patreon.com/thecultural hall. Now, I have to tell you, my grandfather was a member of the Tabernacle Choir for 30 years or something forever before they had the you couldn't be in the Tabernacle
right.
Choir anymore. Now you can be in it 20 years or you have to retire when you're 60.
Correct.
My grandmother was the Tabernacle Choir historian for almost 25 years.
Wow. So what were your grandparents' names?
So my grandfather was Stanley Stedman, and that would have been 70 years ago, probably. And then Josephine Folger is my grandmother.
I know Josephine very well.
And Maureen, my aunt,
absolutely
over for her afterwards. So,
yeah.
So have you tried out yet?
So here is the thing. I have always wanted to. I'm musically inclined. I was, like I said, I studied under Dr. Bentley in high school. My life is such right now that I couldn't do it just time-wise, and it's a tremendous commitment. But I wanted to peel back that a little bit. Let people know, what is it like? What is required of you to be in the Tabernacle Choir?
Oftentimes people think that all you have to have is a beautiful voice.
Yeah.
And that is a very important part of what we're looking for. But we also need singers who have great musical skills, mm-hmm. in terms of being able to look at a score, look at a piece of music, and be able to realize it, to sing it close to perfection as possible on just the first reading.
Yeah.
And I always feel like that those singers who have had singing in high school choirs and in college choirs, university choirs, so on mm-hmm. and so forth, those are our singers who usually come to us the best prepared in terms of being able to do what I just stated. Because yeah. it there is a certain skill set that one has to have in order to really survive in the choir, because we sing, or we perform, I should say, with the orchestra 300 to 400 pieces a year, and we do so on just 2.5 hours of rehearsal on Thursday evening. So
once a week, 2.5 hours.
That's right.
Unreal.
And every week is new music, or sometimes it's not new music, but it's music that we have performed previously. But you still have to come back and sometimes relearn it. Mm-hmm. Certainly. Polish it to in a certain sort of way, and so being a member of the choir requires a lot in terms of just being able to produce at a very, very fast pace.
And it is a very big time commitment as well. It's not just the Sunday broadcast. I think within the past month or the coming weeks, they will have had 3 major concerts all within 2 weeks of each other.
Jeez.
And so it's a lot of material, a lot of time. I'm thinking about General Conference Sunday. I'm not even sure people are aware. The choir is there at 8 a.m. Saturday morning until 12:30-ish. And then Sunday morning, they come back at 7:15 and are there until 4 p.m. plus. They're there the whole day. So
right.
They do lots of extra things that require a lot of time. And it is a very large commitment. And we appreciate the dedication of everyone that is involved in the choir. So
just a few technical questions. Can I have kids and be in the choir?
Oh, absolutely.
We certainly have people that have children in the choir. Yes.
I mean, there are things that you hear about the choir that it's like, I wonder, could you, if you could pass like an ecclesiastical endorsement but weren't a member of the church, could you be a member of the choir?
You actually need to be a member of the church to be a member of the choir. The choir members are actually set apart as musical missionaries for the church.
So, I guess the thing, there has always been this musing of it's like if you were a member and your spouse was not and you were both musically inclined, has there ever been a person that's a member of the choir that hasn't been a member of the church?
Well, not certainly in the time that I've been associated with the
choir. Yeah, not that we're aware of. So,
Are people allowed to have other callings besides being in the choir, or is it that's your only calling?
People can have other callings, but
we advise them to be very cautious. It's expected to be your primary church calling, and it does take a lot of time. And so it is,
as Ryan has already said, it's a huge commitment, and it does require a lot of time.
And I've been here 10 years, and I feel like it's only accelerated in that commitment. We're now memorizing more music than we ever have before, and that requires time and commitment outside of the choir. And so there's just a lot of extra things, I think.
So the age limit of 60, is that just because of the rigorous schedule for health, or what is that?
Your voice is very much a part of yourself. Whereas if someone plays the violin or the piano mm-hmm. or the organ or really any other instrument, you're dependent somewhat on the instrument itself. Well, the instrument, when you're a singer, your instrument is a part of you. And like anything else, with the body, as we get older, it things don't, you know,
starts
things
to
age.
I'll say it. It
things
starts to
age.
Break down a little bit. Starts
right.
to age.
And so 60 is usually a pretty good point where most singers, I think if you look at some of the great singers of the world over the decades, you would find that most have retired by the time they reach 60.
Sure.
There are exceptions to that, but I would say probably most really retire more in their 50s, probably their early to mid 50s. It's just because the voice ages with the body.
Yeah.
And so we find 60 to be sometimes a person will retire at 60 years of age who is still singing beautifully, mm-hmm. but we don't make exceptions. Because
yeah.
if we make one exception, then it's all over.
Yeah, and so, how come you couldn't make it for me? And
that's
so on.
Right.
And then 20 years just because 20 years is a good long time to have a calling, let someone else
exactly.
have the chance.
Exactly. And it is physically demanding, like you said. I mean, even going on tour, things like that, the amount of standing time required in a concert and waiting in lines and things like that, it can be a little bit demanding physically as well. So,
you know, I'm always surprised when I watch General Conference at home, I always pull up Twitter, the social media Twitter, and I always think it's so fun to see the different comments that people will make about the choir. Like, I am crying right now. I can't, you know, the feeling and the emotion. And then there's always funny things like with this last General Conference, and you guys probably will know exactly who I'm speaking of, the gentleman with the mustache who's in the Tabernacle Choir became overnight famous.
Are you aware of this?
No, I'm not.
I'm aware of it,
yeah.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember. Oh, okay.
And so it's just...
I don't even remember a mustache.
It was a great mustache, but, you know, people like props to the guy who's rocking a great mustache or, you know, the cookie catcher or whatever. And it really is, it seems like every time there's some great thing within the choir that... if we can call it pop culture within the church, that people just really latch on to, that it's like, oh, that outfit or a brooch or anything like that people will really attach. I know that people will sometimes, they'll talk about the women's dresses and stuff like that too. And I know from my experience with being in a choir, we had a very formatic uniform. And that's why that is the way that it is, right? There's different body types, and so you have to just be accommodating.
Correct.
Yeah. So many people ask about that, and I think that there's a lot of discussion of can't we make, you know, maybe more feminine or something like that. And it really is. There's so many different body types.
That's really not our department. We don't get too involved in that. But let me just say, it is very difficult. People think that's a simple thing.
Yep.
It is not a simple thing to take a group of people and make them look great.
And the dresses are actually made by hand.
And with that said, I think that our folks do a great job.
Yeah, and the dresses are actually made by hand.
They really?
Yeah, by seamstresses.
It's not as easy as it looks.
No, and that's the thing that I always want to tell those people is it's like, hey, you have no idea what these people are going through. So is that another calling to be a costumer for the Tabernacle Choir?
It is a calling to be a seamstress.
It is, yeah. And we have, again, we have an incredible, we call it an army because there's so many of them who just give such fantastic service
behind the scenes
and behind the scenes that are never out there are those of us who are out receiving the applause,
right,
if you will, and then there are the others who are just these incredible gifted people who give of time and talent in their own way in ensuring that the rest of us can do what we do, which is always a little more visible.
They help us make it look easy, and it's not easy.
So. Right. I mean, you can speak, obviously, from your experiences being a high school and middle school teacher. Like, when you're doing that, you are director and oftentimes pianist and costumer and travel agent, all of those things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's fascinating. I had no idea that that was a calling that you could do.
Yeah.
I also want to kind of pivot and talk a little bit about there's going to be a new hymnal for the church, or at least that's kind of what they said. We'll give you more information in the middle of 2019. How do you guys feel about it? I would imagine on some level you guys have been involved a little bit. I don't know that you can speak to the specifics of it, but tell me whatever you can about the new hymnal.
Well, I remember when the 1985 hymnal came out and how excited I was for that and the new hymns that it introduced to the church, and so excited to see another hymn offering in our lifetime. You know, I don't know. You never know how often it's going to be in between them doing a new one, but I'm excited, and I think it's timely. I think it will be very beneficial and rejuvenating to the church to have that new collection. So I'm excited.
Cool. I have to agree. I had kind of thought that we may not see another hymn book in my lifetime.
Really?
And so to have this announcement, I think it's very exciting, and I think we can look forward to the future.
Yeah. So many great songs, and I know everyone's like, you better not touch my, and then they name their favorite song
right.
within the hymn. Another thing that I think of is, you'll have to forgive me because I don't know how much involvement you guys may have even had with it, but certainly can speak about this, the B1 celebration that happened this last year. What a huge celebration of music for the church that we really aren't used to celebrating. Can you guys maybe talk about your experience or why you think that would be vital within the church to have experiences like that?
Well, some of our choir members were part of that B1 choir, and it was an amazing experience for them, I think, and how great to hear a style of music that we don't always get to hear in our own church setting. I thought it was just wonderful. So.
Yeah. Were you jealous that people got to applaud at the end of it? I thought.
No, actually. No, but happy for them. So yeah, that's great.
I think of so many times where I have been, music, and hopefully this exudes in the way that we're talking, music has been such a strong part of my worship that there have been times where I have been to like music and the spoken word, and I want to just get up and, you know, and clap and let you know and I guess in a way God know how much that I just loved and appreciated that and having that kind of juxtaposition of like, I am so joyful and I'm just gonna go ahead and sit and enjoy my peace and joy. I had to ask that about you guys. Let's take a break real quick. When we come back, I want to talk all about the album. It's Let Us All Press On, visiting with Ryan Murphy and Mac Wilberg from the Mormon. Let's take a break real quick and we'll come back. I'm talking with Ryan Murphy and Mac Wilberg from the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
All right, here in the third block, there's some unique things about Let Us All Press On, so let's open that up. That's the latest album from the Tabernacle Choir. You guys recorded it last year. Some of those things, I know, Ryan, one of your arrangements was arranged 10 years ago and then finally made the album.
Finally made the cut, yeah.
Talk about that track and talk about the selection process for this album.
I would say the majority of selections on this CD are from the hymnal, familiar to members of the church. There are a couple that are outside, and the arrangement I did of Standing on the Promises is one of those. It's well known in other Christian churches, especially Protestant churches. It's kind of a standard hymn for them. It's been around forever. It's a little bit old school style in terms of the hymn, a little bit like a marching song. But I had a lot of fun making the arrangement of it. I think it's got a fantastic message, and the choir sung it for a number of years now, and I think it just felt like the right time to record it. So
I'll say that Ryan's arrangement of it truly elevated the hymn itself. Because if you were to hear the hymn itself as it is, as it appears in many hymnals, it's I would call it a little well-worn. Well-worn. But,
okay.
But what Ryan did to it totally reinvented the hymn itself.
How does the selection process go? Do you guys sit in a room and go, we're not leaving until we get 12 tracks that we're going to put on this thing?
Well, we did put together a list of potential hymns, and then we started whittling it down. The subtitle of this album is Hymns of Praise and Inspiration. Uh-huh. And I think that we wanted to select hymns that were joyful, that also gave hope, and also some that, in which some of them are a little more meditative, and so therefore one can ponder a little bit more about whatever it is that they need to ponder about at that moment in their life.
But I will say, too, and I've learned this from Mac, that there's a method to everything, and most people probably don't realize it as they listen to the choir even on Sunday morning or on the CD. We're very strategic, I guess is the word, about what we choose, what the order is, what the key relationship is, if we're going from slow to fast, if we're going from a large orchestration to a smaller orchestration. This CD definitely is designed with all of that in mind. And we're dealing with hymns that in some cases can end up all sounding the same because it's the same genre. And Mac, it's his gift is programming and finding a way to make it all relevant and interesting and compelling. And so it's like if you listen to the CD from beginning to end, it's like telling a story. It's like going on a journey. And I think that's really one of his gifts.
Do you ever have what you feel like divine inspiration as you're putting these things together? An experience that you could share maybe about something like that?
Well, I think that there is a little bit of inspiration that goes into this. Uh-huh. And Ryan has already said a little bit in terms of how we put these things together, because in listening to music, of course, all my life and observing or having my own listening experiences, I've often found that music can somewhat start sounding the same,
right?
Unless there are texture changes, unless there are key changes, there, for lack of a better word, mood changes. So on and so forth. And I think that if one is aware of those things, that then one can create an experience for the listener, which I think can become quite meaningful. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it can become a little bit mundane and, for lack of a better word, a little uninteresting.
I know the album, when it first came out, number one on the Billboard charts for its particular category.
3 weeks in a row. And right now, I think we're at number two.
Well, we'll get it back up to number one.
Right.
Don't worry about that. That's pretty commendable.
Yeah.
And that's not the first time for the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square.
We've had that several times.
Platinum and gold records. Did you ever think growing up in Little Castledale, Emery County, Utah, Mac, that you would be in the position that you're in?
Oh, certainly not. And I had what was for me a pretty profound experience when I was probably 10 or 11. I came with my grandmother to Salt Lake City. And in those days, you have to remember, coming to Salt Lake City was a big deal for if you were a kid from a small town. You know, in those days, it took us probably, because there weren't freeways or things that got you here quicker, it was about a three-hour drive. And you know, coming to Salt Lake City was really a big deal.
Yeah.
And on one of these trips, I was with my grandmother, and we went to a Thursday night rehearsal of the choir. And I remember walking in, and I remember hearing this incredible wall of sound, first of all, and the beauty of it. Mm. And Richard Condy was the conductor at the time, and they were rehearsing the song, The Holy City. And I remember he was instructing the choir how to sing the word Jerusalem. Jerusalem, that word is used quite a bit in that particular song. And I can still remember what a profound effect that had upon me. And now I look back on that thinking, wow, and I'm now I have that opportunity. Of course, as conductors, we are taught our job is to hear all the mistakes and then correct. And then have the solution of how, if we hear something that we think needs to be better, then how do we solve the problem in making it better? So sometimes now we get caught up in the technical aspects. Once in a while, you're able to step back and say, this is pretty great.
Yeah. The album is called Let Us All Press On. You talk about joy and hope, and that's something that I think the world could all, you know, use a little bit more joy and a little bit more hope. So timely. Was there a particular song on the album that was more difficult, or anyone that has maybe easy, or we did it in one take, or any sort of behind-the-scenes story with one of the tracks that you can share with us?
Well, I think you should talk about Our Prayer to Thee. A little bit.
Our Prayer to Thee is, the text is by President Russell M. Nelson.
Oh, wow.
And it was a text that he wrote for another hymn tune that we don't sing very often. It's a Welsh hymn tune, but when President Nelson wrote this, I believe in the early 2000s, he asked me if I would take it and do something with it. So I made an arrangement of it, which was at that time for a solo voice and the choir and the organ, and we performed it at least once, maybe twice at General Conference. And then as we were working on this CD collection, or this hymn collection, I should say, I just thought, you know, I feel like that maybe that hymn needs to be a part of this, but I didn't particularly want to do the hymn the arrangement that I had previously done. So, really, about 2 weeks before we started to record this, I decided to do new arrangement of it. And actually, I shouldn't say this, but the choir and the orchestra kind of I shouldn't say this, but the choir and the orchestra basically learned that piece during the time that we recorded it.
Oh, wow.
And so...
We often say the ink is still wet on the page with some of our arrangements.
The ink is definitely wet on that particular piece. But again, it's a tribute to our wonderful musicians who are able to do that pretty quickly and in a way that, again, makes it presentable.
Well, the great thing was that was at the end of a full week of recording on a Saturday afternoon. Choir was tired, and
it was the last thing we recorded. It was on a Saturday afternoon. We started on Tuesday night. We did Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night. Then all morning on Saturday, we took a lunch break, and then we came back. And it was about 2 in the afternoon. And I think the thing that was really special about that particular session is that President Nelson actually came to the recording session.
Really?
And he spoke just briefly to the choir before we started to record. And I thought that he would probably stay maybe for a half hour and then probably have to leave because of other responsibilities. But he stayed the entire recording session, which took us about an hour and a half.
Wow.
And he stayed, and then he spoke to the choir and the orchestra again at the end, and it was a very special time. And I'm sure that people will remember that particular session for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to say, I think one of the greatest things that in recent history with the Tabernacle Choir that you guys have done is these Christmas concerts where you bring in other artists. I got to see James Taylor and the Tabernacle Choir, and it's so fun. And I know that it reaches out to an audience that may not otherwise access the Tabernacle Choir. The Muppets, the Sesame Street
That's
character
right.
is another great one that I just am like, is there, and I know you guys won't tell me this, but I want to ask the question just the same. Is there someone that you look to within the music realm that you would really just love, like it's a bucket list, we would love to have that person be with the choir?
We can't give away our secrets.
Ah,
so.
I knew it.
I have to say that really, as far as a list, I've almost everyone on my list we have attained.
Yeah,
and we've been that has, as you've already said, that's become a unique part of what we do. And you know, we have the Conference Center to thank for much of that because the Conference Center has just given us the opportunity performing for so many more people than we would ever be able to in the past. And so we're very grateful for that building, as well as, of course, our beloved tabernacle.
Sure. Is it the two of you that get to decide who that is or make the offer to who that is, or is it a board, or how does that process go?
Well, it's
a combination.
It's a little bit of a process, but ultimately certain decisions have to be made.
Cool.
But I think you're right. It's allowed the choir to do repertoire they might not normally do on their own.
Yeah.
You know, something with Sesame Street, something with James Taylor, and sort of branch out and include people that might not normally listen to the choir. It's been a real great thing for the choir.
Yeah, and certainly fun. A question that someone on social media wanted me to ask you guys is, do you know the secret of how to get tickets? Because we, no one can get them.
Fortunately, that is, again, not one of our areas that we have anything to do with.
And thank goodness, right?
Thank goodness.
Yes.
They do a tremendous job to get as many people tickets.
They do.
And it's worth saying, you know, everyone is always ushered in well and all those things. But I know, you know, you could do it for 2 weeks straight in the holidays and probably not sell out because we don't have to pay for those tickets, but
that's
fill
right.
up the conference center week over week over week. We ask everyone who steps into the Cultural Hall 3 questions, and so I'll ask them of you right now. One of them I know, I would presume to know, I guess, but I'll ask it. We ask everyone what their calling is, and I would assume that Associate Director and Director of the Tabernacle Choir are your callings. If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
Ooh, probably primary pianist.
I was going to...
Did I take your answer? Yeah, I've done it, and I love that calling.
I have, too, as well.
It's one of the best places to be on Sunday.
That's a great calling.
Yeah.
The last one, and you can interpret this however you would like, but we get some pretty unique answers to this question, so I'll ask that question of you right now, is what is your favorite part of your faith?
Hmm. Well, I would use the word that we've used in context of our new recording, and that is joy.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a tough question, I think. Can I think about it for a second?
Of course.
My favorite part. So my favorite part, the answer that came into my mind when you asked that question, and it's not unique to our faith in particular, but the idea of resurrection came to my mind. I lost somebody that I was very close to last year and have been pondering that a lot, and just the promise that we can be together again with those that we love is what gives me hope and joy and helps me to get through. So
I love it. Yeah. I can tell you when I started the Cultural Hall now over 8 years ago, I never thought I would be sitting down with the Associate Director and the Director of the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square, mainly because back then it was the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, but also because What a great experience to be able to be with you guys. I appreciate it so much. I hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat.